Hello, I am Anika Orok, author of The Incredible Women of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, and you are listening to the fabulous Baseball and Barbecue podcast with Jeff and Len.
Listening to Jeff and Len on Baseball and Barbecue, one of my favorite podcasts, and I know it's one of yours too. The only problem is, after I get done listening to it, I'm hungry. All right, guys, take it away.
Welcome to a very special anniversary, that's fourth anniversary edition. Episode number 114 of Baseball and BBQ, and I'm here with my four-year, but forever, host, Jeff Cohen.
Happy anniversary, Len.
Happy anniversary. I'm Len Aberman.
I'm Jeff Cohen.
And I am excited.
It's 4 years, baby. 4 years.
4 years. Jeff, we have a lot to get to. We have an interview with two very special people. Why don't you just tell us about it, please?
We have that famous barbecue pitmaster and baseball player, Howard Johnson.
He played third base for the Mets.
And the Cubs and the Rockies and the Tigers.
He won a World Series with the Tigers.
He did.
He won a World Series with the Mets.
But now he's on to barbecue.
Exactly. We don't talk to him about baseball, and but now, go on.
And his new best buddy, our good friend, Doug Scheiding.
Trying to do a drum roll. We have no money for effects on this show. That's incredible.
Yes.
Howard Johnson, known as Hojo, and Doug Scheiding, known as, well, actually, if you listen to the Barbecue Central show, Sam the cooking guy calls him, I think he calls him Dougie Boy, but but we call him Doug Scheiding. So they're going to be on. And I want to talk about, before we get to the interview, because I know we're going to have the interview, and at the end, you're going to have a rant. So everybody should get excited about that. An anniversary, we could look forward to the next year, and we have a lot planned in the next year. But I'd prefer, at this point, just to look back at just 1 year, not all four, 1 year. So I'm going to start and just say, we celebrated our three-year anniversary by having Robert Wool on the show. Everybody knows who Robert Wool is from Arliss and movies and whatever. And from there, Jeff, we just steamrolled.
Yes.
Care to say anything?
Yes, I was just looking at our episodes.
While you're looking, let me just say, there are people that we want to thank. And you know, it's like the Academy Awards, the music's going to start playing. I also don't want to leave anybody out. But there are some people that have helped us immensely during this year. And I'm not talking about just our guests, although some of them are both guests and behind the scenes. But Jared Kasdan, who's our producer extraordinaire, we couldn't do it without you. Well, we could do it without you, but there's a lot of guests we wouldn't be able to get without you.
Right.
Doug Scheiding, who you'll hear what we have to say about Doug. Doug, we think you're the best. Greg Rempe, who has given us a ton of advice and has been a guest. So he's been behind the scenes, in front of the scenes. We appreciate everything from him. What about the team from baseballbbq.com?
They're the best.
Right? Brett Mandel, Michael Mullen.
Yep.
They make incredible grilling tools and accessories. They've been terrific.
Big supporters of the show.
Yeah, big. We want to thank them. Of course, our theme music, we have the poet and the musician, Shel Kukowski and Dave Dresser, helping us. So we're going to end up skipping somebody and forgetting somebody, but just wanted to thank some of the people. You know, Jeff, we start off the first show of the beginning of 4 years, and we have Tim Kirchen on.
Yeah. Timmy, Timmy boy.
ESPN baseball. I mean, who doesn't know Tim Kirchen, right?
Tim Kirchen, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, we had with him on the episode, we have Kevin Sandrich. New Year's Day, we released an episode with Howard Johnson.
And what was he talking? What was he talking?
Barbecue.
Of course.
What else would he talk?
Right. He talked a little baseball also.
It's not like he played. Yeah. He played some baseball. But he loves to talk about barbecue. And we love to talk about barbecue with him. Not to get too crazy, but we had Kurt Bevacqua. Of course, Doug Scheiding. We had Brian LaPinta. We even took a trip to Hinchliffe Stadium.
Paulie G.
We had Paulie G. Tom Gilbert. We had Bobby Valentine. Jeff, we had Bobby V.
Bobby V. And we've had on our good friend Gary Mintz of the New York Giants Preservation Society. We've also had a world champion, Jerry Royce. And he was on with Nick Mangold of the New York Jets talking about his barbecue sauce.
Yeah, barbecue sauce. The all-pro center for the New York Jets and was talking about barbecue sauce. But we also did talk some football with him. You know, also a very somber moment and in the year. We had a wonderful interview with Marjorie Adams, the great-granddaughter of Doc Adams, who is one of the inventors of baseball, the written rules. I mean, so many things. We had her on. She was a delight. Pine Tar helped us get her on. And then, unfortunately, she passed away not long after.
We had her on in March, and unfortunately, she did pass away back in July.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a special interview. A wonderful woman. You know, not much we can say. She just was great.
Yeah, terrific person. We were very lucky to have her on. You know, all of these episodes and many more can be found at multiple sites. Jeff, how can they get the show? How can they contact us, our wonderful listeners, who we could not have done 4 years without the support of you guys?
Well,
did they give us? I'm trying to think. Go ahead.
Our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Our phone number, if you want to leave us a message, 516-855-8214. Our email, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Twitter, at the Twitter, you can tweet us at baseballandbbq. Our Facebook, same thing, baseballandbbq. Instagram, baseballandbarbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. And we beg you, please rate and review us.
Rate and review us, please, everybody. We really do appreciate all of you who download this show, who just send us in your notes, your comments, and you enjoy listening. We appreciate it. So thank you. We also had Adrian Miller, Mackie Sasser, Stephen Reichlin, and Marty Appel. We had Bree Blackford, I think, twice and we had a barbecue sauce contest. What did I say? Giveaway.
Right.
Barbecue sauce giveaway.
We had Andy Husbands. We had Luke Eplin, who wrote a book about our team, the 1948 Cleveland Indians, the last Cleveland team to win the World Series. And of course, let's not forget Ron Bluberg, the first DH in the major leagues. With that, okay. Len, let's get to the interview. Do you have anything to say about this interview, though?
Oh, yeah. One thing that I should say about this is, you guys, here we go. Let's pull back the curtain. I don't know. I just made that up, Jeff. That's creative, right? We did this. We did not know at the time when we booked Howard Johnson. So we booked Howard Johnson. We booked Doug Scheiding. It's very tough to get the two of them together on the same night. They are very busy people. I mean, they both are world champion winners. It's very difficult. But when we booked Howard Johnson, we had no idea it was his birthday. And to his credit, maybe he didn't realize either. But he was amazing. He did not cancel. He just, what he did do was, we had him on. He gave us a certain amount of time. But at the same time, he's running around his house. He's jumping in the car. I think he was going to a restaurant for his birthday. The audio at times, we are going to beg your forgiveness. Greg, we are really begging your forgiveness. So know that it was just such a fun interview. And you know what, really, though, it was also, it was real. It was real. It wasn't, you know, made up or whatever. I mean, it was Howard Johnson doing this thing. Anyway, then after the interview, we had Doug Scheiding. We talked more barbecue, more baseball. And Doug Scheiding gave barbecue tips to Howard Johnson. So guys, listen to the interview and enjoy.
Baseball and BBQ, we are celebrating our fourth anniversary with an extraordinary show. Bringing these two subjects together, we have with us an all-star baseball player and a world barbecue champion who will talk about, well, baseball and barbecue. Howard Johnson played for four teams, most notably for the New York Mets, also played for the Tigers, Cubs, and Rockies, a two-time world champion and a top 10 leader in most Mets offensive categories. Based out of Texas, former aerospace engineer turned pitmaster Doug Scheiding is a force to be reckoned with on a barbecue competition scene. With a passion for analytics and detail, Doug and his wife Jen of Rogue Cookers have won numerous awards competing around the country, including the Houston Livestock Show, American Royal, and Jack Daniels Invitational. We are thrilled to have both of them on the show. Welcome, Hojo and Doug.
Welcome, guys.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
All right. So very quickly, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Howard Johnson.
Hojo.
Happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you very much. 61 years old.
That's great.
Still kicking.
All right, so, wow. So we've got two world champions on the show. Doug being a world champion pitmaster, and I don't know, Howard, you won something. I can't remember what you won, but I know you. I know you're a world champion of something.
So. I wonder, Doug, I want to ask you, is winning the world champion of barbecue as much fun as winning a World Series that Howard Johnson does?
Well, being with the team might be actually be better. So, yeah, rather than by yourself. So, but yeah, it's I'm sure it's equally as good.
And I see that the Doug has a Chicago Cubs cap on.
That's
Howard, one of your teams.
Yeah, that's right. My final team, 95. That was it.
Go ahead, Doug. Ask him anything you want about that Cubs team.
Oh, well, I actually saw when I was doing my Lynn stalking, I saw that you actually did quite well in Wrigley. You had a five for five game, a five RBI game. And it seemed to be. And I think in your final season, that was one of the places that you were actually doing really well. So you should be happy with the friendly confines.
Yeah, I that was my favorite park to play in on the road. There's no question about that. It didn't matter if the wind was blowing in or out. I just like going there, you know, the atmosphere, the neighborhood kind of look. I just thought that was cool. I thought Cub fans were a little bit different. They were just, you know, basically very chill about the game. And whenever, you know, the visiting team, you know, started mounting a comeback, they got quiet. That's one thing I noticed. Whereas in New York, you know, you'd be hearing a little bit different. Maybe a different sound coming from the stands if you were getting beat late.
Right. Throwing beer, maybe.
Maybe a few boos in there. I don't know. It's happened before. So they say.
Howard, we have a listener, Larry Soifer, who wanted to ask a question of you. He said, in a seven-game series, who wins, the 1984 Tigers or the 86 Mets?
Ooh, I get asked that a lot. So it depends on who I'm doing the podcast with. And since we're all New York guys up here, I'm going to say the Mets would win. And I say that because I think our bullpen was probably a little bit deeper with the Mets. If I had to draw a line of distinction, that'd probably be where it lies. So I think from a position player standpoint, you know, both teams are pretty stacked and the benches were pretty good as well. So you just look at I just go to the bullpen, even though the Tigers one was pretty strong in itself. I think the Mets was maybe a little bit deeper because you have Sid Fernandez basically pitching out of the bullpen, and that's pretty impressive.
Howard, how did Jeff do in fantasy camp, Mets fantasy camp?
Well, he's still alive, so I guess he did pretty well.
I
got a lot of those guys limping home.
I had a blast. I mean, that was might have been the most fun I've ever had in my life. That was just so great. And I thank you and all the other coaches for coming down and making it the greatest time we had.
Well, we have a good time. We have a good time with it. I get asked that a lot. Do you guys like coming down, you know, and Yeah, we do. We like to hang out and see you guys come in there and, you know, take your shot at playing. It's not as easy as it looks.
That's definitely not.
We can't beat the entertainment value watching y'all try to do that. So that's good.
All right. So, and now listen, we don't have a lot of time with Howard. Doug, you are a pitmaster extraordinaire. Oof. For anyone that doesn't know, Howard loves using his Big Green Egg. We are huge barbecue fans, for anyone who didn't know that either. So Doug, give us some tips for making a brisket. Go ahead.
Please.
Well, I wanted to ask Hojo in terms of his brisket. He says he did on the last show, the by the way, number 80, you had the whole hour, you know, like a guest of honor. This is great to be on with you. You said you have the Lipton onion soup mix. Do you still use that?
Yes.
That's actually what my aunt used to do. And one of the
reasons really?
I started using, you know, liking barbecue and stuff, you know, and trying to cook things at home. And this is a long time ago. But when you inject, is that part of what you use to inject?
Yeah, I make my base out of the Lipton onion soup mix. Okay. And I'll add my beef stock, you know, and I'll add some Worcestershire and a few different things to it to try to spice it up a little bit. But that's what I use to inject. So now, and I try to use all of it. I try to use every bit of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you wrap in foil or butcher paper?
I've done both. I've only done butcher paper one time, but the foil is typically what I use.
Yeah.
When I do a brisket.
And yeah, my suggestion would be that, yeah, if you get a, do you have a fat strainer to strain off the fat and the au jus? And when you wrap, put some of that base in there when you wrap. So always when you wrap, you need to have some moisture in there. So,
okay. I'll remember to do that.
That'll actually help. That'll help with the steaming process and make it tender. So I know you went to the pig fest in Lakeland and
That was a blast.
Yeah, we're getting some secrets off of some people. So that's a lot of what people do. So, and you said you let the moisture out. What temperature do you cook it to? I guess that's the steam you're letting out before you put it, rest it for 3 hours.
Yeah, I take it off after a certain period because I know that it's not going to take any more smoke. So at that point, you know, I just wrap it up. I try to keep it moist. And I think my temperature was like 198. If I got an internal that much. Once I got to that point, I would be like a 198. And then I would.
And when you use Wagyu,
it froze up.
For at least. Okay. Oh, can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got you.
Okay. So the biggest thing I tried to do with it is after I wrapped it and took it off once it reached temperature was keep the thing in a cooler for, I've done it for up to 4 hours.
Yep. At contests, I'll even go up to maybe five or six, just depending on when it gets done. And yeah, I know. And you mentioned Wagyu and Prime, et cetera. You can actually go a little hotter with those 203, you know, Wagyu.
Really?
You could probably go, you know, assuming, you know, sea level, but 203, 205, maybe even with Wagyu. Really? You need the extra temperature to really get that collagen and melt it out as much as possible.
Okay.
So that would be something I would do as well. 198 if you're, you know, cooking maybe a choice or something. And temperature is really a guideline, but I would still go a little hotter with those higher grades of meat.
Okay. I didn't know that. That's good. I like that. Yeah. I'll keep that in mind.
Especially for brisket. So.
But what did it for me was the injection.
Yeah.
I use
injection like butcher barbecue.
Dried out.
Butcher barbecue, it in addition to, you know, the flavor that you're getting from that Lipton, it'll add some phosphates, which will actually help retain the moisture in addition to. So you could even mix some of that, you know, there's various Cosmos, different things. You could even mix some of that with your base, you know, put a little bit in with your base that you're already using and experiment. Do two, always do two. I always like to do two, but if you've got enough room.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I've only done one in the past, but that's I like that idea.
Yeah, I always have a contest every time I do something because I always like to compare it right, you know, one to the other. So,
okay, excellent.
Doug, what if I want to buy meat, but I don't want to spend, I don't want to break the bank. What's the grade that I could get where I'm going to get quality, but I don't have to, you know, buy a Wagyu or, you know, something so expensive?
I buy prime briskets, almost, you know, it's an extra maybe buck or so a pound. I don't know, down here we can get it for $4.99 a pound. It's worth the extra dollar. You know, if you want to try to challenge yourself, then you could go with choice, but that, never get select if you can. Sometimes you can get choice, go through the and look through the case, and you can actually see the marbling. You know, they grade those things in one spot on the steer, so sometimes they can make mistakes.
And when you're picking it out, you want one that jiggles a lot?
Oh, picking out a brisket? Oh, that's a great question. So I look for a thick flat. You know, we cook the full Texas style packers down here. I look for the thick flat. So if it's real thin, you know, about half an inch or so, I'd rather get one that's about an inch and a half. And then that's my first. I like to see if it's kind of flexible, to see if that fat is hard, you know, because if it's hard, then you won't be able to bend it. I look for a medium type color. I like 12 to 15 pounds, you know, in terms of a size of a brisket. And generally what you can do, and Hojo, maybe you know about this as well, is to wet age those things. So generally, when you get them at the case, you know, at the grocery store or your butcher, they've been probably 21 to 28 days since they were processed. You can actually hold those in a refrigerator that is kept well at like 40 degrees, hold it for another 7 to 14 days. And that will, the enzymes will actually help break down some of the meat proteins, and it'll actually make it a little more tender.
And you don't have to put that in liquid at all. Just stick it in there.
No, keep it in the cryovac. Yeah. Don't let any air get in there, but you know, stick it way in the back. If you've got, especially if you've got a spare refrigerator, like you're in your utility room, stick it way in the back and have it cold. And for competition, I like a 45 to 53 day. So I'll keep that for two weeks now. And when you freeze, you always want to freeze fast and thaw slowly. And that has to do with the size of the ice crystals. So don't put two briskets in the freezer at the same time, freeze it one at a time. And then when you want to thaw it, put it in that same refrigerator and thaw it over 3-4 days.
Okay. I like it.
Hojo, other than this brisket, what do you cook that maybe Doug could give you some tips on?
Oh man, my pork is good. My pulled pork. That's always a good thing for me. I try to use that.
What about gator? Do you cook gator?
That's my family really enjoys. You know?
Howard.
Having some technical difficulties. Howard, we have you?
Yeah, hang on 1 second.
Okay.
You got me?
Yep, we got you.
Yep.
I want to answer a baseball question if I can, Hojo. You were a coach after your playing career. You coached a hitting coach in the minor leagues and different systems. How important is a hitting coach on a major league level compared to on a minor league level?
Well, it depends on what
level. I use it in the way I describe it is, the younger the level, the younger the player, the more mechanical you're teaching. So not to say that hitting is all mechanical, but if you think of a sliding scale as mechanical and mental on opposite sides, and the higher level you go, be in the big leagues is the highest, you have more of a mental tilt to what you're trying to do, because those guys want a lot more information than they do necessarily physical stuff. You know, the physical stuff for them is going to be there and repeat a lot of the swing that they already have and have learned. And so they just want the little mental things about what the pitcher's trying to do.
Gotcha.
And so or pattern, how they pattern out at all. And with a younger player, you can't speak that kind of language to them because it's just too much for them to process.
Gotcha. You were a coach on the AAA level, AA level?
I've been a coach at every level.
Every level.
Yeah.
Howard, did you want to be a manager? Did you ever consider becoming a manager?
Oh, absolutely. I've thought about it. Absolutely. That would be something that, you know, if that opportunity was to arise, I would definitely probably jump at that.
But now something like that, do you kind of have to throw your hat in the ring on that? You have to let some people know you're interested.
Do your work, you know, throw your name out there. You know, at the end of the day, clubs are going to do what they feel is best for the organization, but you definitely want to, if that's what you want to do, you want to put your name out there.
Howard, I wanted to ask you about when your career is coming to an end. Some players, I'm going to bring up Buster Posey because he just had one of his best years. He won Comeback Player of the Year. And I can't remember, there was a player who once said, that's the one award they only want to win once. They don't want to win that twice. Sure. But he retired at the top of his game. When you retired, what was that final decision like? Do you think you retired at the top of your game? Did you think that maybe you could have put in another year? Or, I mean, how is that when you make that final decision?
Well, usually when you get to that point in your career and you've played that long and you're thinking about retirement, things that drive you away from the game have to do more with how your body.
That's the hardest part, because physically you can do it, but it's hard to be in that position as an older player, traveling as much as we do on airplanes, you know, constantly every day. The wear and tear really takes its toll on you as you get older. That's the hardest part. And that was the big attraction of the guys that did steroids, was it kind of took away that wear and tear. And that's usually the stuff that drives guys away. That's what happened to me. My body started to give out on me when I was, you know, I was, well, when I was, my last year was 95 and I was 34 years old. Already I was starting to feel things that, like an older guy, and it happened so fast. And so I couldn't overcome it.
Would you say the unsung heroes of the baseball team would be the training staff? Because when we were down in the fantasy camp, that was unbelievable what they were doing.
Yeah, those guys actually, they serve such a big purpose, because, you know, you players come in, they're going to be nicked up. You know, there's an old saying that a lot of younger players, if
doing right, you know, they want to come out of the lineup, or they don't, you know, they want to take a day off, say. But there's a big difference between hurting and then being hurt. Everybody plays hurt. Okay, but not everybody play. You shouldn't be playing with an injury. That's a different story. So it's a big distinction to make. You don't want to be out there if you can't function with an injury. That's a different thing that, you know, sometimes trainers have to make a call for you. But, you know, the times have changed quite a bit with regards to how much this is. Now, nowadays, it's almost, I don't want to say it's accepted, but I think teams try to protect the players a little bit more by, you know, scheduling days off. Maybe the player doesn't want it, but it's in his best interest to have it.
I was going to ask him about when he came back, and I think when you were 50 or so and played two games with your son and Glenn.
Yes, that was tough on me, Doug. I mean, it was difficult to get out there and to do that. I think I went into I got my knees replaced a few days after that. That was.
Yeah. Well, the training staff reminded me of that. Probably appreciated them.
You know, trying to get into some kind of a shape to be able to do that. And it took me a long time. And I'll be honest with you, I still couldn't do it. I mean, to the point that I wanted to do it, but I got, you know, I can still see the ball. I can still track pitch. I can't do that anymore. That's the hardest part, is being able to track pitches. And, you know, when you've been out of the game for a while and you all of a sudden you're thrust back into it, you know, you see the ball differently. You just see glimpses of the ball coming at you, as opposed to, you know, your eyes moving well enough to track a pitch. That's completely different. So, you know, it was tough.
Go ahead, Lynn. Sorry, I cut you off a little bit.
Yeah, no, I want, you know, Howard, you mentioned, I heard you say something, it was the connection wasn't great, but I did hear steroids come up. And right now, you know, the Hall of Fame is coming up for a couple of guys. They're in their last year of eligibility. I'm not going to ask you your feelings on players and whether you think they should be Hall of Famers if they were found to do steroids. I think what I'm going to ask you more is when you were playing, so they obviously, the steroids were around. Did you ever?
Not as much as you would think.
Okay. But so, okay. So it wasn't as prevalent as, I don't know how prevalent it's become. Now they're, you know, obviously it's not around as much, hopefully, but I don't know. How much of an edge do you think it gives these guys, I guess, is what I want to ask you.
It's just from a recovery standpoint. You know, it's when you're 35, 36 years old, 37 years old, and physically you feel like you're 26, you know, that's quite an attraction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, you know, players may choose to try to explore.
It carries a lot of helpers with that, I guess. You know, it's, I remember Milo on data, you know, someone was brain cancer related on the steroids and stuff.
Can't hear Howard. I don't know what happened, but you're cutting out.
I'm sorry.
No
that's
worries.
Okay.
No, Howard. One last thing before we go. I know your time is short here. What do you think of the state of the game today?
I think the game is state of the game is from a fan standpoint. I think that they're drawing a lot of fans. I think the game has changed a little bit, and what people expect to see.
Gone are the days of the old National League type game where. There's a lot of hit and run. There's a lot of movement, a lot of guys to the bases. I think that part of the game is probably gone, but it's still a great game. I mean, you can see pitching now. I didn't see back guys coming out. Every guy coming out throwing 100. Back when I played, more special, you know, guy had a great sinker or guy had a great cutter or you know he had big velocity, but they always had a special pitch. Now it's more of a straight power game. I think fans enjoy seeing that part of it, but there's a little bit more contact. I think that'd be perfect.
Hojo, oh, right. We know we got to let you know you're on your way to a looks like a birthday party or something. Happy birthday to you again. It's a
happy birthday,
a great,
Howard.
Great
happy
birthday. And we'd love to get connected with you again.
Yeah, we'll do it again. And Doug, I appreciate your tips, man. It was great.
Absolutely. You're there in Lakeland, Florida, right?
Well, I'm in Nashville right now, but we're gonna be in West Palm Beach here pretty soon.
Oh, okay.
Kind of back and forth, yeah.
You bet. Let me know how else I can help. I'll be glad to.
Absolutely. I'll be in touch with you, my friend.
You got a pit master on call.
Yes.
Right? What other podcast gives you a pit master on call?
Giving you the hookup.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Thank you, Hojo. Have a good night.
Thanks,
all right,
Howard.
Guys. Have
happy
a good
birthday.
One.
Good night.
All right. Happy birthday. Take care.
The audio wasn't the greatest, but we've got our favorite pit master, our third co-host, Doug Scheiden.
Chad Ward's around here somewhere?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. Chad Ward.
We love Chad.
That's why I thought he was in Lakeland. Maybe he was born in Lakeland.
He was born in Lakeland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chad has a barbecue store down there.
Right.
I did not realize that today was his birthday, but then, you know, he's on his way to a party or whatever. The audio wasn't great, but I think that there was a lot to be gathered from that conversation. Hopefully we have Howard back, but we have Doug. And Doug, let's talk.
Let's talk. I know what you want to talk about. You want to talk about the Mets and Max Scherzer today. Am I right? Or Marte and Kana?
Yeah. I mean, let's talk baseball. We have on a world champion pit master, and we're going to talk baseball. I love it.
Yes. Well, I was following where's Max going to go? And lo and behold, the Mets got Max. Yes.
But you know what he's going to say? He's going to say, oh, I really wanted to play in New York. It wasn't the 43.3 million a year that brought me. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
3 years, 130. Not a problem.
It's nuts. And full disclosure, we're recording this on the day that Max Scherzer signed with the Mets.
Right.
So,
but this is going to be our anniversary episode,
right.
And we're so glad that Doug's with us. But Jeff, say your comments on it, on Max and the contract.
Oh, what's the OC going to say?
look, there's been a lot of criticism by some people I know that's saying, oh, he's too old, he's not worth it. But you know what? Max Scherzer at 37 years old is still on top of his game. He still has a great repertoire. He was in the finals for Cy Young. He had less than a 3 ERA in today's baseball, and a short-term contract. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, and how many strikeouts he had this year? Like 260 or something.
Yeah, he was up. He was part of the leader. He had like 2.64 ERA.
Yeah,
and, you know, he's still at the top of his game. And I'd rather have someone who's 37 who can still pitch than a guy who's, I don't know, 30 or 28 or something who doesn't know how to pitch. Max Scherzer knows how to pitch, and have Max Scherzer and DeGrom on top of it is for number one and number two. Nothing wrong with that, baby.
Yeah,
nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
It's a lot of money. I'm sorry. But
that's the thing. The money's no object now.
Yeah.
You have Steve Cohen, who three or four times the richest owner in the game, but by far. So, you know, money's no object now. I mean, the Yankees were doing this for years and years, and now the Mets do it. And, you know, everybody's, oh, you can't do it. Well, this is not the Wilpons Mets anymore. New era, baby.
Doug and Jeff, you know what? What I was thinking as we were talking to Hojo and his sound was kicking out. Yeah. Shout out to Greg Rempe of the Barbecue Central Show, because I was thinking, oh, he would be going out of his mind.
Oh, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, no, Greg, we're going to get comments from Greg on this.
I mean, I was, and for people who obviously this is audio, so we're doing this by Zoom. He was walking all over his house and then outside. Then he was in a car. I think he was on his way to his birthday party or something. Yeah. I mean, that was just like, no wonder.
Hey, when you get Howard Johnson, you get Howard Johnson.
Exactly. That's how I feel about Doug. When you can get Doug, you get Doug.
Well, not really. You know.
No.
Oh, we love Doug.
Yeah. He's a rogue.
Yeah, he's rogue. Doug, what's happening in your world?
What's happening? Did my last Traeger class a week or so ago. I'm actually going to do a catering event for some higher end managers for gentlemen on my street. And I'm going to do that next week. And so I'm just starting to try to get ready for some of the big cook-offs. The two big cook-offs of the year that I always do are the San Antonio Rodeo in January, and which is at the end of the month, and then the Houston Rodeo, you know, one of my favorites. So that'll be at the end of Houston, end of February as well, when the Houston Rodeo will be. So gearing up for those.
It's so cool to see you doing those Traeger classes, because the way they promo that, you are on there just like any of the other, you know, Diva Q's on there, and it's like, there he is, Doug Scheiding is doing his class. And those classes are I haven't, you know, truth be told, I have not attended one. It's definitely, Jeff had Mets fantasy camp on his bucket list. I guess I'm going to attend a Traeger class on my bucket list. I think mine's probably a little easier to achieve. But how do those work exactly, those Traeger classes? You do it all by Zoom? I mean, how are those done?
Yeah, right now, you know, during COVID, they're all virtual. So usually it's 10 to maybe up to 15 people. And some people, like when we're trimming brisket, et cetera, they're actually trying to trim their brisket with me. And so maybe, you know, if you have 15 people, maybe seven of them are actually trimming the brisket with you. I think it's hard to really, you learn by doing, I understand, but you kind of miss some of the things. And so, but before COVID, they had a 40-foot trailer that with a couple, and they would go from city to city. And so they'd haul that trailer, and then, you know, I would fly in and I cook everything, but sometimes I'd even help them shop if they hadn't shopped. And
wow.
We'd go in, and usually it's a 2-day type training class at the Traeger Platinum dealers, and go in early the day before, get everything prepped. And then I like to cook, you know, my brisket overnight and those sorts of things. So there's two classes, and usually it's about you demo the meats, you trim a chicken, trim ribs, and then you serve. So, you know, you'll do the whole prep and then you'll actually serve the food to the people. In the virtual, obviously I still do the same sort of thing and show them how to wrap and, you know, separate the au jus, et cetera. And then I'll slice my brisket and I'll show them kind of how to do a Texas slicing and, you know, always do the bend test. And unfortunately I get to eat it and they don't right now.
Doug, I have a request. Now, everybody knows Doug has a Instagram account and he puts lots of delicious looking pictures up there. A lot of brisket, yes. A lot of ribs, pies, tacos I've seen up there. So
taco,
yes. I'm going to task you, see if you can put it up there, your dry brined Texas beef ribs. I haven't seen you put those up there yet.
Oh, yeah. I cooked some beef ribs. I guess it was about a couple of months ago, but yeah, I've got a couple in the, what my last training class, that was one of the things we taught. We taught brisket and then we taught my dry brined beef ribs. Dry brining, basically putting salt on the night before, kosher salt on the night before, wrapping it in saran wrap, putting it in the fridge. And then the next morning, most of the salt is gone. It's actually gone into the meat. It's instead of doing a wet brine, you're just doing the dry brine. And that layer of salt actually enables the meat to retain extra moisture when you cook it. And so that's what it's doing. You can go ahead and put your you know, rinse it off and put your normal rub on there. And I think, you know, that to me, I actually kind of cook it like a brisket after that. I'll cook it to about 170 and then I'll wrap it with some juice. And then about 195, I'll unwrap it. And then, because I think that helps tenderize it. And then I'll let it cook the next 5 to 8 degrees and get a little bit of a harder bark. I like a hard bark on a beef rib.
Actually, I might task Glenn to actually make that.
What? As the barbecue guy, he should.
Yeah, right? What?
I mean, come on. I would like to
make that. The recipe is right there on Traeger.com.
I will do it, but I don't understand why you have the cooking equipment. And especially at this point, well, you don't really have a kitchen. So, okay. Yeah, I should do it.
Well, we sang happy birthday for you tonight for Hojo, so that's the least you can do.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know what, Doug, do you think you're becoming like a brand? You know,
to a certain extent. I think if I did this more full time, it would be you know, much more pronounced. I'd have a lot more time to devote to things, and you know, I'd do some videos and YouTube and TikToks and things like that. But you know, my 7-to-5 job, as I call it, takes up a little time. So, but and then my, you know, 5-to-9 job is my barbecue job. So just like doing things like this, y'all spend a lot of time doing these now that you're pumped it up to weekly. So you know how much time it takes.
Oh yeah. No, you are right. We went weekly because we found that we had so much content and we were falling further and further behind, especially with the authors, because we'd have them on and we wanted to have their books promoted before they went to paperback, at least. So, right. So we went to weekly. And we're catching up. We're definitely catching up. So.
Yeah, for our listeners out there, Doug Scheiding not only cooks meat and desserts on Traeger, but he also has cocktails. So I see one of the recipes is smoked Texas ranch water.
Yes.
So could you explain how you make that on the grill?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So Texas ranch water is actually become kind of in fashion or vogue right now, but allegedly, you know, it's supposed to be a drink where the cowboys came off all parched in West Texas, you know, with the dust and everything. And so it's a mixture of tequila and sparkling water, if you will. Down here we call it Topo Chico, and because it actually has extra fizz with it and a little bit of lime. So what I did is I basically take those limes and I put them on the Traeger and I smoke them for 30 minutes. You know, cut side down, you know, around the edge. So it's actually the air is going right onto the lime. And so I do that for 30 minutes and then I will squeeze half a lime into the cocktail glass, then a third a cup of tequila, 2/3 a cup of Topo Chico, and then throw in a couple of jalapeno slices in there to give it a little spice. And so that's pretty much my smoked. And I've also tried doing smoked Moscow mules and also margaritas. You got to be careful how much you smoke the margarita juice, because you can overdo that, which I've done. So, you know, because if you put a juice in there, it will smoke. You know, it will suck up the smoke. You know, it'll soak it up. You know, just like some of your spaghetti squashes and sweet potatoes and things like that. They act like sponges.
Yeah, I actually made a mistake once. This is one of my mistakes. I had my smoker going and I had to make potatoes, but sweet potatoes. And I put them on the smoker. They cooked, whatever. Now, I'm not a sweet potato fan at all, so I don't eat them. But I served them and I noticed that nobody was eating them. They were all like leaving them over, but nobody was confess or tell me why they were not eating them, except for my wife. I could always depend on her to tell me, which is good. And she said, "What did you do?" She said, "Did you smoke this?" Sweet potatoes apparently do not taste good smoked.
Did you cut them up into like pieces and stuff? Nope. And then
no, I just put them on.
Did you peel them?
No, I had at this time I didn't have a Traeger. So I was using the pit barrel and I had it on the hooks for the ribs.
Yeah.
And then I had the rack and I put them on the rack and I guess they took on the smoke and they tasted terrible apparently. So
this year I took over the sweet potatoes because I don't like the candy corn caramel sweet potato. So I did stuffed sweet potatoes. I cooked them Alton Brown style, which is, you know, poke them with fork, you know, with the fork, mm-hmm. and then, you know, put it on about 350 oil and salt in an hour. And then they become, just like a baked potato. They become soft. And then, so then I opened them up, put some butter, black beans, cheese, brisket, and put them back on for 5 minutes. And so I served stuffed sweet potatoes for Thanksgiving this year, and they were a hit.
Yeah, those I might like. Anything, put brisket in anything. It's like add bacon to anything. I would have liked.
I cooked a brisket. I was like, I'm going to have sliced brisket, and I'm going to put it into the stuffed baked potatoes or stuffed sweet potatoes, I should say. Sorry.
Doug, if I open your refrigerator or your freezer right now, how much brisket am I looking at? I get the feeling there's a lot in that refrigerator.
I think in my deep freeze, I have 3 briskets, and I know I've got a beef shank in there, and I've got two, three bone, big dino beef ribs that Jeff was talking about. So, yeah. And I've got a few racks of ribs and things. So I don't have a problem freezing that kind of meat.
Do you have a particular type of fish that you like barbecue?
Yeah, I have. There's a couple. I like a flaky white fish, like a sea bass. So I have one that's with some lemon for citrus and I actually developed it for Zach Brown when I cooked for backstage for Zach Brown, because he wouldn't eat barbecue. He thought it affected his vocal cords. So I came up with this recipe. So you marinate it for a little bit and then you cook it on the Traeger. I also like salmon on the, you know, to cook salmon and, you know, do it like a Asian Thai style, or, you know, you could even do it with some rib candy or something like that to make it a little sweet. So I've been trying to do cold smoking of salmon because I don't know if you have Whole Foods up there, but Whole Foods is the bomb down here, and they have the cold smoke habanero salmon. It's only $23 a pound. I can't really pay that, you know. Wow. So I've been trying to make a recipe that knocks off the taste of theirs.
How about mahi-mahi?
Mahi-mahi? Yeah. I haven't done much of that on the grill. If I did, I'd probably cook it hot and fast, and just like you would on a stove, you know, cast iron, and just sear the outside and let the inside be a little raw. I like, I just, when it's cooked all the way through, it just, to me, it has a weird texture and it looks a little strange.
So they eat fish in Texas. Okay. I didn't know.
Yes,
that, so.
I do. I need to eat more. I need to eat more. But yeah, salmon is probably the thing that I eat the most in terms of a fish.
Yeah, salmon is really good on the cedar plank, of course.
Yep.
Yeah. Although I find that I don't get enough of the cedar flavor with the salmon. It always cooks faster than before it gets any of the cedar flavor from the plank.
Yeah, I think it's more just a vessel to hold the salmon together when you're taking it on and off the grill, and less the flavor. You're going to get more smoke flavor probably from the smoke that you're smoking it with than you are that cedar plank.
When you're making the brisket, I wanted to ask you this when we were talking to Howard. What's the preferred wood that you're using?
Well, in my classes, I tell people to use their wood that is regional, that's familiar to their regional area. You know, I'm told that apple is one of the woods that's common up in New York. Hickory in the Southeast, to answer your question, here in Texas, pecan, oak, and mesquite. Those would be the three that people's taste buds are accustomed to that. Those are all pretty strong flavored woods. So is hickory as well. So I think, the big meats like that give a good strong wood flavor to it if you can. That's why I do it overnight too on a Traeger,
Well, on the Traeger, you've got pellets. So you can basically get you can order any pellets you want. In that case, what would be the ideal pellets then for a brisket?
Yeah, I mean, if you're just going straight up, I like pecan. And so I'd go pecan. And if, on a pellet cooker, it's a real fine smoke. It's blue smoke. So that's, real fine. Sometimes the pellets aren't, 100% pecan as well. But you can use a smoke tube. And if you want to get extra smoke on something and you're cooking it not quite as long, put a smoke tube on there. I did a chuck roast a couple of weeks ago, and I used a smoke tube on there. And you could taste more of the smoke on there. I just put it about an inch and a half, 2 inches away. And it's certainly cooked for like 3-4 hours. And that smoke tube filled with pellets, it burned that entire time.
Doug, 2022 is right around the corner. Do you see any new barbecue trends happening for the new year?
Ooh,
that's good. I am barbecue trends for right now. One of the things is this cream cheese craze driving people crazy. It's just So I hope that trend doesn't continue. So, but I think from a cooking standpoint, pork is kind of one of the meats that's not cooked as much as it should. Some of the other ones like lamb and things like that should also be cooked a little more often. Hopefully we don't get into this caveman style and, cooking, but I hope that the low and slow kind of continues on. So I think the reverse searing, more people seem to be more into the reverse searing as well, doing the steaks with a reverse sear and reverse searing a lot of other stuff.
A couple of episodes back, we had Vic Clevenger on, and he cooked alligator. Have you ever done that?
I have.
You have?
My I have. That is a tough one to cook. We have a family get together, family reunion, and I'm not a hunter, but if you cook it all, if you bring it, I'll cook it. And so we have a get together. And so they always have a challenge meet every year. And 1 year it was alligator tail. And yeah, I cooked it. It was good flavor wise, but it was a little rubbery. And I guess the tail is really hard. And I didn't notice soak it in buttermilk or anything like that to help kind of loosen it up. But now I do. But yeah, that was probably one of the tougher ones. Another tough one was what they call shoveler duck. I guess it's one of the ducks that not even the duck hunters go and fetch, and don't waste their time. But yeah, so they gave me a shoveler duck. And so what I did is I made it into a little, almost like a little present, like a popper. So I had a little half shell of onion, did some Cajun cream cheese, which is cream cheese mixed with maybe cayenne and chili powder, and so it turns a little orange. And then you put that put the duck on it, and then you put the pickled jalapeno relish on there, and then you wrap it up on both sides with bacon, and it looks like a little present. And those suckers ate all of it. I had about 36 of them, and my cousin's husband couldn't believe that I got people to eat shoveler duck.
Doug, are the Chicago Cubs on the way up or on the way down?
Wait, let's see. There's been a lot of signings, and I haven't heard the Cubs mentioned once in the major signings. You know, I don't think they're on the way. I don't know if Rizzo, there was, you know, rumor that Rizzo was going to come back, but I haven't heard anything on that. And, you know, that's something that, if we would have had more time with Hojo, I would have asked him in terms of, you know, the CBA expiring on December 1st and all the signings. And he actually went through two of the strikes, right? He was in the minors. When that was not in 81, Jeff, you can help me, Miss Jeff.
Yeah, Rainier. Yeah, 81. Yeah.
Okay. And then 95. And, you know, 81 is when I stopped paying attention to baseball. I was big into baseball, and when they had the strike, it kind of made me mad and stuff. And so, and then, you know, the second one as well, which was even longer, canceling what the 94 World Series and everything. But yeah, you know, this is going to be interesting, you know, to see what happens, and hopefully there won't be a stoppage of work. And to me, it's crazy that, you know, people are signing and the owners are signing, et cetera. And, you know, if they sign now, it's a guaranteed contract. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's nutty. There's so much money in the game, obviously. It's flush with money. The owners are giving it out like it's candy. And now there's going to be a lockout. And, you know, well, when this airs, you know, still probably be in during a lockout. It's crazy.
And but if you sign before, are you guaranteed? And then if you, yeah. So,
yeah. So what you're saying is Scherzer, who signs this big contract, if there's a lockout, he gets paid once the date, whatever, he's going to get paid.
Well, no transaction is going to happen during a lockout. So there's going to be no free agent signing, no trades, nothing like that during this time. The players who have signed already, their contract's guaranteed, you know, for the next season, whenever they play. If it's 162 games, they get the full amount. If it's 100 games, they get a prorated amount. So they will get paid based on their contract, no matter what. You know, the crazy thing about Scherzer's contract is, you know, what do you say, 41, 42 million a year?
43
million a year?
43.33333.
Right. 333.
Did you know that the Washington Nationals start paying his deferral of $15 million a year in 2022?
Oh, wow.
So in addition to that, Nationals are giving him $15 million a year.
Oh, wow. So the Mets got a discount.
No discount. But he's getting paid $43 million from that Mets, and the Nationals owe him $15 million a year for next several years.
Wow.
I think he can afford a pool in his backyard.
Yeah. That sounds like a Bonilla contract or something, huh?
Right.
So this CBA that is going to cause this stoppage. It's the weird thing is, it seems like everybody's at peace and harmony. It's, but yet there's going to be a stoppage. I don't understand it. You know, it seems like everything's going fine. Why, you know, what, Jeff, we're going to, and Doug, what, why are we going to have a stoppage when everything seems to be going okay?
Because the players don't like the economics of the game. They think they're getting paid too late. You know, they want to get paid when they're younger. They have more, they're better years, I guess, would be when they're younger, in the 20 to 25, to 28-year range, and that they can't become free agents until they're, what, 30? You know, after they spent six years with the team and they brought up at 23, you know, so it's, you know, 29, 30 years old. They want to get paid, you know, earlier in their career.
Did you see the Tampa Bay's shortstop? Who was that? Just 20 years old?
Wander Franco. Yes.
He just signed a big contract.
Yeah, he did. And the thing is, and it's, look, he got security for, you know, his generations of Francos to come. The thing is, when the last couple of years in his contract, and he'll still be a young man, he'll still be what, 30? He'll be underpaid compared to the other shortstops of that time. You know, he'll get paid $25 million a year, where the Correas and the Stories and the Lindors are paying, you know, much more than that. And, you know, there's always that type, you know, will he complain about, oh, I'm getting underpaid now? Well, you know, he's told you to sign this contract.
He took the security.
Absolutely.
The security.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing right. wrong with that.
Right. But then, you know, you give up something when you take that. There's always the possibility that, you know, his career, either he gets hurt. He only played half a season.
And, you know, so the team is really taking a big risk. And that's one of the things on the player side in this is free agency is, you know, what happened to Chris Bryant in terms of, you know, being put down and having to be on the team for 172 days for a full year. That's, you know, as a Cub fan, I you know, it was good for the team, but it just didn't feel right when they did it because he was ready for the big leagues and for them to put it down. And you know, this lottery versus, you know, I think what, excuse me, going back to that, I think the owners are proposing 29 and a half as a age or year limit for free agency. And that's not going to fly with the players union. As Jeff mentioned, the annual salaries have actually decreased, believe it or not, the last few years. And so they feel like, you know, they're underpaid, but, and then the owners, you know, I think there's something, you know, with regard to a bad product being put on the field for the, you know, the kind of stockpiling the draft pick. And, you know, as compared to going to a lottery. So there's talk of going to a lottery, I believe. So, Jeff, you know a lot more about it than I do, but that's kind of what I read about this morning.
Well, I think the owners want to increase the amount of teams in the playoffs. Right now there's 10 teams. They want to increase it to 14 teams. You know, seven in each league.
Ooh, which, that's too much. NBA.
Yeah, isn't it? NBA-ish. But they figure that's where the money is, you know, and then – you know, it's not always, obviously, the best team does not always win the World Series. The team that has the highest payroll this year, the Mets, will, you know, don't have to work, you know, doesn't necessarily win the World Series. It's the team at the time, it's the hottest team at the time, not the best team. You know, and being an old coot, I remember, you know, it was only, you know, one round of playoffs. And actually, before that, before 69, there was no playoffs. Team won the division, you're in the World Series. Then it went to the division series. It was one round of playoffs. Then they went to two rounds. Now there's going to be four rounds of playoffs. So it's always, you know, you got to be hot and have a lot of luck. Not necessarily the best, because I think the Dodgers were the best team this year and they didn't make it.
It's exciting.
They lost some of their pitching at the end.
Yeah.
It's exciting though. Yeah, going through the season and only two teams would make the playoffs, right? Because you had two divisions in each league. And now, I don't know, there's something about the fact that your team has the chance to at least go to the playoffs, to be there, to not every year just not make it. So I don't think, and plus there's more money involved. And these players want all this money. Well, their money's got to come from somewhere. TV revenue, right?
Not just TV, there's TV, there's streaming.
Right.
There's the whatever the internet has their thing, the MLB radio, all these streams. Advertising in the stadiums.
Doug, speaking of TV, there's all these you know, obviously you had Barbecue Pitmasters, you have all these shows. But now there's still, you know, on Netflix you got Barbecue Showdown or I always get them mixed up, Brawl, Showdown, whichever. But have you been approached to be on any of these shows? And if so, would you do it?
It's interesting. When I won the Houston Rodeo, I was actually, you know, cooking for another team. And that's when they had the Kingsford event. And the guy that I was cooking for, he the first year that I cooked for him, he had actually won it and gotten a fight with his cooks over the trophies and stuff. And so he asked me to go cook it with him, but he only gave me like 2 weeks and it was up in New York and it was when it was on the battleship or something. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. Cause I wasn't going to put myself in a situation that I wasn't going to be able to put out 100%. And that was one of the best decisions I ever made. So cause unfortunately, he made a fool of himself, if I can say that. But he just didn't do well. You know, I mean, they basically, like when he turned in his chicken, they were like, did this Fox get hit by a train, you know, and stuff. And so I would have forever, you know, but, you know, they say, you know, even bad exposure is good exposure. I've been approached. In fact, I think I've got a message right now on that next Netflix thing. So I just don't want to be cooking possum. You know, if it was a barbecue contest, I would. You know, and like with, you know, when we had Grubbs on, you know, he was like, he's the only one that stinking cook possum. And it's not just the judges making the decision. It's the producers, too. So, yeah. So, and I don't have 2 months to give. I mean, or 6 weeks or however long it is. So,
right.
Yeah, under the right circumstances, sure. You know, if it's a real competition, sure. But no, not under those conditions.
Understood. Yeah, because I think you'd be good on those shows, but I certainly understand.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'd be good if I could plan. You know, my wife is. It would be good on Chopped. You know, give her 4 or 5 ingredients, and there she is. So
wait, invite her, Jen.
I'm not.
Yeah,
not coming on.
Oh, yeah. So she's giving me a 1 or 2. I've got to do a live taste test here. Oh, she's made bread pudding. Ooh. Hey, this is like a virtual training class, guys. She's made bread pudding and she's put a topping on top. Am I allowed to say what the topping is, babe? Yeah. Okay. What is it?
White chocolate mousse.
And she's put. Ooh, yeah. So
can she at least wish us a happy 4-year anniversary? That would be special.
Oh, it's your anniversary. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
And maybe, is it Happy Hanukkah too or no? I mean, it's just like a night.
While we're recording this, yes, it is.
Yes, but when this airs, it will be over.
That's right.
right.
But it is our 4-year anniversary special. And we're very happy that we're spending it with you. And how's that bread pudding?
It's fantastic. It's hard to tell which one is better, but I think maybe 2 is better.
I think it's more stabilized too.
Yeah, it's the texture. So, yes, I'm sorry. I'm having the bread pudding on your anniversary. So, but I appreciate it.
Now,
yeah.
Ask Jen, can she make a gluten-free version of that?
Do you make a gluten-free version of that?
I could if I had gluten-free bread.
Yeah, just gluten-free bread. She could do it.
Yeah. Well, the problem is there's the gluten-free bread. I mean, I don't eat it, but from what I hear, it's not the best.
Oh.
Gluten-free bread.
Well, the key to the bread pudding is having the bread a little stale, right?
Right.
Doug, in your house, is it food constantly? Is it like you create, she creates? I mean, it's...
We're always trying to do different recipes. And yeah, so that is part, you know, but that's why we have to work out all the time. Or else, you know, I think it was Hojo last dinner, you know, his on episode 80, he's like, you know, he's a big guy. He's got to be a good pit master, you know. So my wife calls me a barbecue small. I'm a barbecue small, you know, I'm a large, extra large, but that's a barbecue small in today's environment.
I love it. Jeff, before we let this man go, do you have anything else for him? Because, you know, we could keep him here forever. I mean, so.
I just want to say through this podcast, we've met many people, many relationships. I'm just so grateful for your friendship, Doug. And I appreciate you coming on our show several times. Anytime we ask you, you're always there available to us. And we just appreciate so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's been fun. This is great, you know, to be on this side of the mic and ask a few questions and then answer a few as well. So especially, you know, with some of the authors and, you know, the barbecue people and answering some questions and seeing if you can teach them a few things, because that's the point of taking a class. You know, if you can learn 1 or 2, 3 things, then use those and incorporate those into your own recipe. Don't take my recipe and use it. Take the process. I'm always saying take the process and then use whatever rubs and things like that. So the process is more important, but I appreciate you guys. It's been great getting to know y'all. And hopefully if I get up to, if I get some more planning when we get up to New York or Rhode Island next year, if we get asked, to go cook that event again, and we'll be able to get together. So,
yeah.
And I heard you're coming to Texas. You're coming to Texas is what I heard with Sean and Ryan. I think that's what I heard on that podcast.
We hope
so. Is that what I heard?
and if I could piggyback on, usually it's me that gets all emotional and whatever. You've heard me on various episodes. We've talked about what this podcast means to us. And I've said many times how you are one of the people that we are so thankful that we've gotten to know. I cannot believe that another year has gone by. Every time, you know, we have to stop ourselves sometimes because we'll have a guest and right away, let's get Doug on with the guest. Doug will ask good questions. Doug will, but you know, we can't, it's hard to split 0-3 ways. So
yeah, no, I appreciate you thinking of me. So, no, I appreciate it. So, and I respect y'all from, you know, kind of like Greg, et cetera. Y'all do so much research. That's why today when I was doing research on Hojo, because I listened to that episode for the third time today, by the way.
Wow. You know,
the episode 80. So I listened to it for the third time, picked up some new things. And, you know, was stalking him like you like to say, Lynn. So when I was doing that, I was like, OK, I'm stalking, because I was like, are they going to know it's his birthday? But I guess he told you it's his birthday.
Actually, so. No, I was actually put on Baseball Reference just to do a little research myself. And it's his birthday and it was highlighted. And so happy birthday. Oh, Tate's birthday.
So. You know, Doug, we had the good fortune of meeting Howard. He was here to do an autograph signing. And we met him at the hotel before the signing. And we actually, we gave him a book. We gave him a big green egg book. Green,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. That's what he's got.
Yeah. And, it was nice. Again, he's also somebody who we've met through the podcast, I think he'll be the first to admit he's no Doug Scheiding.
You know what I mean? No, I was good at sports, but I was definitely not, baseball wasn't my best.
But so. Tennis, you were a tennis player.
I gave up baseball to play tennis, actually. So, yeah. And I've, you know, that's one of the things I've actually played at the U.S. Open courts up there at Flushing Meadows once back in the day.
Nice.
All right. Nice. So we're Jeff, I'm going to throw it over to you because I don't know how to end these shows.
I want to ask, so Doug, tell us where people want to get in touch with you. I know you have Instagram, you have Facebook. You're also part of Head Country, I believe.
So, yes. So I'm on Rogue Cookers on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all the same, just Rogue Cookers. I'm also an ambassador for Head Country. And I noticed, thanks guys for mentioning Head Country a couple of times. I think on episode 80, you talked about it with Hojo as well. So one of the things I didn't get to is I'm also an ambassador for E3 Meat, which is Adam LaRoche.
Yes.
E3 is the, you know, error on the first baseman. So he has is so dry as he is, but he does have a pretty good personality once you get to know him. So
and hopefully, that,
I,
hopefully
I need to start working on getting him on the show. So there's a few people I've got in mind in the barbecue area as well as, but that would be one that we need to get Adam and Jake on the show. So, well, I'll do my best to get that done.
Well, thank you, Doug. And happy new year. Best wishes to you, Jen, family. And again,
being healthy.
Love you coming on the show. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. Doug, thanks, Lynn. Thanks, OC.
All right.
Good night.
And thank you, Hojo. Thank you, Doug. Thanks for joining us on our 4-year anniversary show.
Thank you, guys. That was great. So, Jeff, before we wrap up our 4-year anniversary show, let me turn the mic over to you. You have are you going to do what I think you're going to do?
Yeah, this is it's always this time of year. Always gets my blood boiling with the Hall of Fame voting. It's always controversial. I mean, I love it. I mean, who doesn't love the Hall of Fame? But it's always controversial. And if you're on Twitter, there's a guy named Ryan Thibodeau, and his Twitter is at not Mr. Tibbs. And he has a tracker. He tracks all these the known votes, people who make their votes known. So I've been looking at some of these, and some of them I just cannot figure out in my life. For example, Len, I know you might want to chime in here. There's a guy, his name is Jeff Blair. He's a voter. He voted for four people. He voted for Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, David Ortiz, and Alex Rodriguez. Okay, all steroid guys.
That's a lot of juice.
Yeah, right, whatever. But he also, last year, he voted for Manny Ramirez, but this year, he didn't. So that kind of like, what does that...
Wait, hold on. Did Manny come back and play, or did he lose any RBIs, Jeff, between last year and this year?
I don't know. Here's another guy, Paul White, another voter. He voted for Todd Helton, David Ortiz, Gary Sheffield, and Billy Wagner. Okay, that's his vote. That's fine. He also last year voted for Curt Schilling, did not vote for him this year.
So Curt Schilling was Manny and now Curt. So Curt was a Hall of Famer last year, but all of a sudden he's no longer a Hall of Famer?
Exactly.
That's very interesting. I wonder if he has less wins or less strikeouts or less World Series appearances or less bloody socks. I don't get it.
Here's an interesting one. John Heyman. We all know John Heyman. MLB Network. He's always on the radio. I think he has a podcast also. He voted for five guys. Now, listen to these five guys. Barry Bonds, Andrew Jones, Jeff Kent, Scott Rowland, Curt Schilling. Votes for Barry Bonds, but not Roger Clemens, which, you know, I guess I know they're different positions, but he must have his reasons. But it's just kind of strange that both of them steroid users.
Right.
And not Alex Rodriguez, who is a steroid user. But, you know, if he voted for Barry Bonds, I don't understand why he wouldn't vote for Rodriguez. Oh, you got like this one. Steve Marcus, another longtime voter, wrote for Newsday, National Voter. He voted for nobody. He sent in a blank ballot.
I wonder what he voted last year.
Yeah. Well, apparently nobody either. Again, Jack McCaffrey. He voted for seven, but last year he voted for Schilling. This year he didn't. So it looks like Kirk Schilling is losing votes. And I know he's controversial, not in PEDs, but social media and type of thing. But baseball-wise, he didn't do anything different. So he's lost votes that way. I'm just going to give you a couple others. Here's a Seidel LeBron. He voted for 10 guys. Bobby Abreu he voted for Barry Bonds last year, not this year. So he lost, Barry Bonds lost his vote for doing, I don't know what he's done, you know,
but he did differently.
Yeah.
He did something worse, I guess.
But he did vote for Roger Clemens, Todd Helton, Andrew Jones, David Ortiz, Manny Ramirez, not Alex Rodriguez, go figure, Scott Rowland, Curt Schilling, Sammy Sosa. Now, come on. You voted for Sammy Sosa, who's a steroid guy, but not Alex Rodriguez? And look, whatever your position is on steroids, this just doesn't make sense. And last year, he voted for Omar Vizquel, which this year he didn't, which from last year to this year, Omar Vizquel's been involved with domestic violence, so we don't know the whole story there. Right. But so, yeah, I can understand that. Mark Saxon voted for eight guys. I don't know who this guy is, but eight guys. But last year, he voted for Scott Rowland. This year, he didn't. And he had more spaces on the ballot. He could have voted up to 10. He voted for eight and decided, okay, Scott Rowland isn't good enough.
But he was last year.
Yeah.
Wow. Right.
And I'm going to read one more. It's from a guy named Aurelio Moreno. Now, he voted for seven guys. Bobby Abreu, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Todd Helton, Scott Rowland, Sammy Sosa, and Billy Wagner. Okay? But in the tweet from this guy named Adam Dore, at Shut the Door, Dore spelled D-O-R-E. And by the way, this is nothing. This is all on Twitter. This is like, I got all this on Twitter. So this is nothing. I'm not revealing anything. This is all right. All
no,
there.
No special, exactly. No insider trading.
Right. So he writes for Aurelio Moreno. He voted Billy Wagner plus his six holdovers. Notably, Moreno has often waited until the second year of eligibility to begin voting for a majority of candidates. What do you think about that?
Please, I'm not going to, don't get me started with the rant. I mean, that's the guy. It's insane. It's
well, crazy. We know 1 year he voted on his first year of eligibility. We know one guy he voted for.
Yes, he did. That exactly. So it's not even, he doesn't even follow any kind of, there's no rhyme or reason there.
So
whatever.
The Baseball Hall of Fame voting is, you know, it is what it is. It's everybody's vote. And I guess they've been doing this forever, since 1935 or whatever. And it's always controversial.
Yes. Well that might good thing fun. It is, I guess, Jeff. Good thing it is, because otherwise you would be just sitting there, I guess. No rant.
And I do want to mention one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There is a Hall of Fame voter. His name is Adam Rubin. And I happen to play softball with this Adam Rubin. I just want to read you his votes because, pull back the curtain, this is a guy I play softball with.
That's very cool.
Yeah, isn't it?
And no, I mean, the fact that you play softball.
Oh, I know. And when
it's very cool.
And when next
Adam Rubin is an extra.
But he voted for Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Todd Helton, Andrew Jones, David Ortiz, Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, Scott Rolen, Curt Schilling, and Omar Vizquel. So that's who Adam voted for. You know, when
that's actually makes sense. I mean, I guess yeah. He voted for all the steroid guys. That's the thing. So, Jeff, I've got to ask you, you bring up the Hall of Fame. Give me your opinion on these guys, okay, who say, oh, well, he was a Hall of Famer before he took steroids.
Yeah, you know, I'm not big on that. I know some people do say that, and I see that point, but I don't understand if they were Hall of Famer before using steroids, why they needed to use the steroids. I mean, obviously, Barry Bonds wanted to be Ruthian and just, you know, I guess, was it jealousy that McGuire and Sosa was getting the notoriety and he wasn't? I mean, you know, what was that? So he just did it for, you know, he wanted to be the best of all time. And now it's tainted being the best of all time. Roger Clemens is just, you know, he's just nuts.
Okay. Oh, I love when you say things that mean we're never going to get the person on the show. You know what? Roger Clemens, yes, we're not going to get Roger Clemens on the show now, probably. But, you know, in 30 years, Roger Clemens might. He might come on.
You know what? Right now, they're tracking getting into the Hall of Fame. I mean, with about 5% as of this recording, about 5% of the known votes, they're tracking it above 75%. Well, we'll see.
So hold on a second. 10 years. Okay, so you're on the ballot 10 years. 9 years, Clemens and Bonds did not get in. So and this year, if they do get in, what was it? 9 years was their punishment. That was their, you know, bad. You took steroids, but now you're getting in.
Their penance. Yes.
All right.
Tell us what you think. Call us 516-855-8214 or email us at baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Let us know what you think.
Jeff, what I think is that this is our 4-year anniversary. I really hope that there are people, you know what? There's two people that we need to thank. I just thought of, and they're probably the two most important people that we should thank.
You're welcome. Yeah. Oh, you shouldn't. Thank you.
Our wives.
Oh, them.
We need to thank our wives because if they didn't hold the fort down, we would never be. It's not just doing this one time a week. I mean, you and I have taken road trips. We, you know, we go, we do things, we meet people, even if we don't do the show itself, don't have any issue with. Actually, you know what? Should we be offended? They actually don't care. go.
Okay, everybody, discuss that with your own. Then we'll see you next time. Len, take us out.
Wow. Yeah. Jeff, I got to really think about that. I never thought that. All right. 4 years, guys. We can't wait. Can't wait for you to see what comes up. We are so happy. We're so happy that you guys are part of this show. please tell people we want a bigger audience, but that's fine. We think everybody is great. We appreciate our listeners. We appreciate our guests. So here it is. Baseball always brings you home. From the poet, Shel Krakowski, the musician, Dave Dresser. We'll see you in episode 115 as we begin year 4.